This is Long Shots, VSiN's premier golf betting podcast. Here's Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, and Kelly Bidlin.
It's Long Shots Golf Betting Podcast here on the VSiN Podcast Network. Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, and Kelly Bidlin until his internet craps out. Here for the Scottish Open this week. Boys, we managed to do it again. Be all over a golf tournament and not get home the outright winner. You know, some would say, hey, you, at least you were all over it. At some point, it gets a little frustrating, but it kind of is what it is. Wes, several guys, you know, you and I talked last week. All six guys, I bet, ended up making the cut. Only Kevin Roy played himself into position to perhaps get it home. And, of course, does not get it done. Saturday did him in as he had four bogeys on the back nine on Saturday. Had he just only had two, who knows what would have gone on there in the tournament. But we expected a birdie fest, and that's what we got.
Yeah, that's absolutely. And maybe I should be looking at the first round leader market a little bit more. Doug Ginn was first round leader. Did I bet him? No, of course not. finishes like T30. And that's the thing about this. Like Brian Campbell, this is a story all three of us just as like fans should love, because this is a guy that's a journeyman that had a bunch of injuries, lost his card several years ago, struggled to even stay on the Korn Ferry Tour, and now he's a two-time winner on the PGA Tour. I think I saw him, one book I think had him 400-1. I think market average was like 250 or 300, but at least I didn't have to lose in a playoff to Brian Campbell this time, like at the Mexico Open, unfortunately for Emiliano Grillo backers. That was their fate on Sunday as Emiliano Grillo finds the trees. If Brian Campbell finds the trees, it bounces back into the fairway and he wins in a playoff. So he's done that now twice this year. Mexico Open and now the John Deere Classic, top 60, I guess, ranked player in the world, top 30 right now in the FedEx Cup standings. So this is a story we should love, but man, it costs us bets not betting the guy. So congratulations, though, to Brian Campbell, as he is now a two-time winner on the PGA Tour. And there's a lot of guys that have bigger pedigrees, which we'll mention during this program, that don't even have one win on the PGA Tour.
Kelly Bidlin, last week, friendly to you or not so much?
Oh, not at all. Loser last week, but I like Wes is talking about. I got close to betting Grillo, so that would have been really frustrating. But that was already a week I was going into. Felt like I've had a pretty good read on things here the past month or so. And man, that was all I remember is last week sitting here at the desk and digging into that tournament and knowing it's a birdie fest and really not seeing much on the board I was loving. So it was a complete loser week, but it was very light losing. So I will take that and move on to Scottish Open. I'm much more excited about it, actually.
And how about the fact that Brian Campbell, 171 out of 171 on the PGA Tour for driving distance in this era where you got to just grip it and rip it and bomb it all over the place. Nice to see a Corey Pavin slappy hitter type off the tee win event still on the PGA Tour, because it is a rarity.
Look at that finish. Look at those list of finishes for one Brian Campbell this year. I've got the bookended win and win. Win at Mexico and a win last week, and that is a lot of missed cuts.
Look at some of those events, he has like no chance to compete because these courses are so long.
T32 at the Masters. I didn't catch that. Good on you, Brian Campbell.
Jeez. I mean, again, look. Yes, there's variance in golf, and then there's what goes on with Brian Campbell. I mean, like, you know, whatever. I mean, we just have to chalk it up sometimes to it is what it is, and you know, it's golf's hard, and sometimes these guys can find it and put it together. And, you know, when you look at the look how much he gained everywhere. Except for off the tee. I mean, like, that's just ridiculous numbers. I mean, like, it's just like silly numbers, you know? 5-6 on approach, 2-8 around the green, 6-8 on putting, 4-5 tee to green. It's just silly.
I got a great tweet. I don't have it in front of me. Now, I feel so bad whenever I go to a reference of a tweet that someone sends us during a show, but got a great tweet on a numbers game yesterday of Wes, you were on basically when we were talking about this, but talking about the rollback, and does Brian Campbell winning twice in a season just make us all shut up about adjusting courses and everything to fit the situation? Like, it's this dude can barely hit the ball, as far as Matt Brown, and he's out there winning twice in a year.
I might be longer than he is. Who knows? I don't know.
You might be.
Yeah, we'd have to check it out. Like, I don't know. I'll take it. I'll take it to the course, but. You know, these courses that people can get at, we saw. Kelly, what was it when we were sitting there talking on Sunday as you and I were on the show together? What did I tell you? 57 guys were at least at 10 under or something? Like, so, something ridiculous. Like that. Nearly 60 guys or something was at 10. Yeah, it was a silly number at one point throughout the course of that tournament. And now we move on to the Renaissance Club, the Scottish Open, in which it might actually play low here as well, depending on how this weather is going to play out. And it is a course, like a lot of the courses in Scotland, where I can actually attest to this. I literally played the air quote hardest course in the world, and I got it on a day the wind wasn't blowing, and I actually didn't think it was all that hard. Like, I mean, it was, you know, like, I played Carnoustie. And like the winds were like 5 miles an hour and like it was not crazy. And like, you know, my caddy turned to me and he goes, we get like 3 days like this a year. Like, he was literally like, you're here on like one of 3 days that it's like this. He's like, enjoy it, live it up, because like you would be 20 strokes worse today if the wind were blowing like it normally does. And I was like, okay,
John Vandeveld is saying, why couldn't the weather be like that when I played the Open, the famous where he had to take his shoes off and get in that water to hit it out where he collapsed many years ago there at Carnoustie.
Yeah, and so Kelly's got the weather up if you're watching us over on the YouTube channel with all of this. And again, subject to change, but everything looks pretty mild. And if that's the case, then this course, like a lot of the courses over in Scotland, like a lot of the defense is the weather. And if it's not going to be that way, these guys are going to be able to bomb away. It'll roll out. It'll roll forever. Get it down there. If you can hit it far, you're going to have an advantage. And at least as of today, Mr. Bidlin, from what you're showing us, that's the way it looks.
I mean, it's shockingly calm through the weekend, I would say. I mean, this is like no rain, no wind, really to speak of. Friday through Sunday, it looks like Thursday morning, wind gusts up into the mid-20s. So, again, we're recording this early on Tuesday out here on the West Coast. So this is check back. But, you know, first round leader impacts, DFS waves, all that kind of stuff might be impacted by Thursday. So check back in on this. I think whenever we talk weather, because of all the different betting implications, and Thursday's always is probably the most important day, but still only having one day where it's looking bad. Mm-hmm. That is nice. It is nice. Makes it a little easier to handicap.
Well, Wes, as we look at the Renaissance Club, this is a course that we have seen for several years. Lots of sample size here. Before it was a co-sanctioned event, at least it was a DP World Tour event. So a lot of these guys have played this even before the PGA Tour guys started going on over there. So what are we looking at here as we head over to the Renaissance Club?
Yeah, Renaissance in North Berwick, Scotland, about 20 miles east of Edinburgh, the capital city of that nation, is actually right next to Muirfield, which is a regular track in the Open rotation, designed in 2008 by an American, Tom Doak. This is more of a modern links course. It's not necessarily what they call like the pure links that you'll see in a lot of the Open rotation courses. 72-82, par 70, kind of a hybrid. It is links a little bit, and it is a little bit parklands, which are most of the designs you're going to get traditionally week to week on the PGA Tour. You've got 83 pot bunkers, firm turf, zero water, as you would expect on the links courses. So fescue throughout, big greens, 7,000 square feet. Slower greens this week, too. Now you get to some of the slowest greens you're going to get all year long, 10 on the stint meter. So that could play into a factor, because we know, like, when you have the Ryder Cup on the European sites, those greens are always super slow. and that usually favors those guys. Rough can get up to about 5 inches in some spots. The fairways aren't like totally wide necessarily. I think they're about 32 yards wide on average. So rough can be a little bit thicker here than most of the links style courses that you're going to find over there in this part of the world. So I mentioned 72, 82, par 70 on this course. Both the par fives, by the way, or there are two par fives, I should say. So it's a little bit different, even though it's 35, 35, both sides. One par five on the front nine, two par fives on the back. So you do have three par fives here on a par 70, which is kind of rare. It's usually one on each side. As Kelly showed with the weather, looks pretty ideal. Very low 70s, which we would take out right now, being out here in 108 degrees in lovely Las Vegas. Not as windy this week, because we've seen the wind affect the scores here in the past. I think when Xander won here 3 years ago, 7-under, 273 was the winning score. Last year with Robert McIntyre, 18-under. Minwoo Lee won at 18-under when it was a par 71. Now back to a par 70. So should be, I think, somewhat gettable with the weather being so benign this week. Split field, by the way, 156 players, but half of them are PGA Tour members, half of them are DP World Tour members. Even though we do have 8 of the top 10 in the OWGR in this week's group, low 65 and ties make your weekend cut.
One of the interesting things, too, about this one, as we talked about over the last couple of years, the three top finishers that are not already qualified for the Open do get to move on and play next week. So even if the guys can't win the tournament, there will be motivation for some of these guys that are at least somewhere on the leaderboard come on Sunday, because even if the 15 guys in front of them are all already played in the Open, you're still going to be trying to get up that leaderboard. So additional motivation for some people, perhaps a little bit further down the line.
When you're scrolling those apps too, just kind of looking on your phone, you'll see like the Claret Jug by some of these guys' names. That means they're already qualified. So that is something absolutely to monitor, because these are the last three spots that will be at Royal Portrush next week.
Yeah. It's a thing that I've done the last couple of years. It's worked 2 of 3 years. It did not work. It was either last year or before, which is I went in and found those guys and then just bet them in head-to-heads, because I'm like, all right, these dudes have as much motivation as anyone. The other people, their guys are matched up with, maybe not so much and whatever and all of that. I think it worked out 2 of the last 3 years, but there was a year that did not come to fruition. So just something to think about as we go into all that. All right, Mr. Bidlin.
I think that's the only way anybody should be betting that, though, like that. I don't do a lot of that stuff, but if you're going to target the motivation, try to go matchup, right? Just single matchup. Don't shoot for the top, 20, top 10 or something like that. If you're really just basing the handicap mainly off that, right? I think like you're talking about, look for a matchup versus where someone's got that to play for versus a guy who doesn't have anything to play for.
Mr. Bidlin, time to pull up the odds board here as we take a look. No shock. Yes, Scottie Scheffler is in the field, so he will be your short shot in this one. Rory McIlroy, Xander Schauffele, Tommy Fleetwood, Colin Morikawa, Bob McIntyre, Ludvig Åberg, Justin Thomas, Sam Burns. We have a lot of really, really top-name guys playing in this thing. List goes on. Corey Connors, Victor Hovland, Matt Fitzpatrick, Sepp Straka, et cetera, et cetera. Kelly, the question, as always, is we know Scotty's always going to be the favorite in every single tournament that he tees it up. What number is too short? What number is just about right? What number would we be willing to pay on Scotty? Do we think that maybe he's just using this as more of a tune-up and we should really be looking at him next week? Those are all the questions, basically, that we have with Scottie Scheffler on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, it really is. And usually, I think when we're looking at DraftKings plus 360, I think he's probably fair around that. Around that number, but too short for me. I'll be honest, though. I really wasn't planning on doing anything with Scheffler. I did see 5-1, though, here in town on him.
I think MGM, which is a national book, is still at 450. So,
that's pretty juicy. I don't blame anybody for wanting to go and play that. The other one, I'll pivot off Scotty real quick. Rory. If you're interested in betting Rory, definitely compare what you're looking at outright prices to winner without markets, because I think it was Caesars I saw that they have 8-1 on Rory in the winner without Scottie Scheffler. So I'm staring at 8-1 right now over at DraftKings. Definitely shop that stuff around if you are looking to play in that market. Man, every time I think I'm going to play in that market, though, I end up finding, you know, a lone outright number or something that just is too juicy that makes me want to pass it up. So Scheffler will be a pass, and I'll just pray that, you know, my guys get home and he doesn't again.
Yeah, Wes, I think that I think it's, you know, one of the strategies we've talked about. Whenever we get on these super hard courses, that's obviously where Scheffler's skill advantage really comes into play. I don't really think we need to be looking at the winner without markets this week, because if the weather holds the way that it does, I'm not saying this is going to be a complete birdie fest, but it's certainly not going to play incredibly tough. And so, as we've seen the past couple of weeks on tour, you give these guys pretty good conditions and a course that is receptive, and, you know, these guys can go low. Like, I mean, you know, the vast majority of the field. So I'm not really worried about Scotty here in this one so much, because I don't think the conditions are going to be all that tough, and that actually just brings the field closer to him.
It does. More players can certainly play well here. And even if you look at the recent history, Renaissance has hosted this now 6 years. It's been mostly class players that have won here. And we mentioned Rory. He won here 2 years ago. Heartbreak for Robert McIntyre. But then Robert McIntyre got that break back last year went where he got relief and then stiffed that on the par five to like 3 feet and made eagle and eventually won this thing. Xander Schauffele won here 3 years ago, 18-1. Minwoo Lee was 100-1. So you will get some prices that compete here, and all different kind of players too. Big hitters like Rory, and then a smaller hitter like Aaron Rye, who won here in 2020 in a playoff when that event got held in October due to COVID. So wide range of players here. Like I mentioned, you've got some DP World Tour regulars that, you know, maybe you're more used to playing on some of these slow greens. Maybe that could come into play. So, yeah, I did not go. I saw a lot of people that are going the without market, without Scotty, without Rory. I don't necessarily think you need to do that this week.
Yeah, I think Matt, I think that was a great point. The way you laid it out, I think that is perfectly said. And partially because of that, frankly, I'm more interested in Scheffler next week than I would be this week.
I'll put it this way. If you'd have pulled up that weather report and it was going to be complete garbage and complete trash, then it makes those guys much more valuable, right? Because Scotty Scheffler can just play in anything, right? He can play in any conditions. He's mentally tough. He's whatever and all that. But since it doesn't look like it's going to be that way, and we'll continue to say, always check back with the weather. It's variant. For me, I don't think it's necessary, you know, this week in this. All right. Wes, we started to look at what was going to be important to us this week. What did you value as you started to pare down this field?
I started with the approach, even though these greens are really big. They're about 7,000 square feet on average. However, there are a lot of contours, and there are a lot of slopes, a lot of undulations on these greens. So you got to hit it on the proper side. You can't really miss here, because then you're going to be getting into three putting, where I did use three putt avoidance as one thing this week. Last year, I think it was like 13 of the top 17 gained over a stroke and a half on approach. And then it was the same thing basically the year before. So I did look at approach. In terms of off the tee, looked at a little bit of distance here, because the driving distance here is higher than it is, I think, on average at other courses, you know, mid 290s here. So you've seen that guys can bomb it here and be very successful. And then I did some strokes gained off the tee, because I did, even though the fairways are kind of, you know, narrow, I did want to put a little bit of accuracy in there. So that's how I kind of did that. But a lot of what I did this week was around the green or putting, even though the weather, when it's looking like it's going to look, makes it easier to kind of scramble and gain around the green. I still think with the way these greens are shaped, and then just the undulations and the slopes, it's going to be hard. So I use some strokes gained putting, just base putting, bogey avoidance, three putt avoidance, I think were something to look at, because I think that's what's really going to decide here, because you can miss fairways and still play well here and still be competitive and still be up or at the near the top of the leaderboard. So a lot of stuff with putting, yeah, you know, and around the greens is kind of where I based even a little bit more, or at least certainly equal to off the tee and approach.
Interesting.
Kelly, what did you look at this week?
I was much more ball striking heavy than it sounds like Wes was. I really didn't do too much around the green. I did factor in some scrambling and bogey avoidance. So I guess that helps make up for a little bit of that, Wes. But yeah, it just pure around the green stats, I didn't really look at too much this week. One of the easier places for these guys to play around the greens, plus the large greens. I didn't really factor that in, but that's interesting because we rarely see each other kind of zag.
It was more putting for me, to be fair, than around the green that I valued, and that includes the base putting, then the three putt, and the bogey avoidance, and some of the scoring stats.
Yeah, shit, man. I'm not saying you're wrong at all. It's just interesting that occurred. I didn't really factor that much in. I did look at a lot of putting stuff. I'm with you on that. Three putt avoidance, just regular strokes gained putting, some of the lag putting, bonus putting stuff that you can do out there. I thought those were important with the big greens. On top of that, I think whenever we're talking large greens, opportunities gained is big. You know, where can you, on those approach shots, I want someone who's hit fine in the green, but we're talking greens this size, put it close to the pin too. So heavy on approach, heavy on opportunities gained as well. And then it was a lot of just pretty basic off the tee driving distance for me. It definitely did factor in distance pretty heavily this week.
Yeah, probably the most I have in a hot minute based off of the weather report. Now, if that changes, I will go in and run another model and de-emphasize. But I think I put in a quarter of the model on driving distance. I think I went like 25%, something like that on distance. And since I think that it's going to be easy to score on, pretty heavy birdie or better gained for me. I put in some opportunities gained. I think you're going to really separate yourself on these longer par fours. So I wanted some par four scoring for me. If I think it's going to be low scoring, I can't have you out there making bogeys. So I had some bogey avoidance factored in. And for the first time, and I went and looked, I think for the first time in 18, 19, 20 tournaments, I actually put putting into the model. I have not done that in a very long time, but you just can't argue with the numbers here at this club, right? I mean, if you're a good putter, and at least in the upper half of the PGA Tour, and you're allowed to be aggressive, that just changes things so incredibly much, right? And like with the way these greens are, if these dudes who are good putters are able to really friggin' give it a run because they're not worried about it running out very far past and all of the different things that can go wrong, with all of that, I do think it can make a difference this week. So for the first time in a very, very long time, I did put putting in there, and then just a little bit of just general off the tee stuff because I didn't want to completely rule out dudes that aren't long. So if you're able to get it done off the tee, even if you aren't long, then I wanted to at least have that stat in there to make sure that it was something I could reference as I was going through to fill the card out. So yeah. One of the more simpler models, though, for me this week,
me too.
Didn't really get into nuanced stuff with all of that. I didn't put in on links type courses. I didn't put in on any of that type of stuff. I just kind of like went in with more basic stuff.
I also think the counter, I mean, it sounds like we all weighed putting pretty heavily. And Matt, you said it. We've seen it in how this course has played so far. The counter, however, would be that, okay, most of these guys have been so used to playing on the much faster, much shorter cut grass on the PGA Tour greens, and you're kind of leveling the playing field by everybody making this change all at once. But I just the stats that we've seen from this course, like you said, kind of bears out that this is more of a factor this week.
And you will get some like variance in the stats, even though it's a relatively simple model, which I think all of us did this week. But if you don't use any of some of the pay sites that we've mentioned that kind of commingles all this data together for all of us on a week-to-week basis, let's say you just use PGAtour.com or you just use DPWorldTour.com. You will see some variance in some of these stats, like a lot more basic stats, I think, on the DP World Tour, where you get the strokes gain stuff and you get three putt and stuff like that. But you will see a little bit of difference in some of the numbers, so you have to take into account some of the competition, some of the different type of courses, because you probably get more variance on the DP World Tour in terms of a wide variety of courses that these guys play, because they play all over the world. It is the World Tour is in the name, so you got to take that into a little bit of context where you're like, oh my God, this guy gained so much more off the tee on this tour as opposed to the other tour. So I just kind of commingled what I just put in the column just for, you know, the reader's sake, is to kind of just look at what the guys rank on the PGA Tour and what the guys rank on the DP World Tour, because you get some guys that have played both tours, but maybe they've only played like 8 rounds or something on the DP World Tour this year, as opposed to like 40 or 50 on the PGA Tour. So just got a, you know, just a little wrinkle in terms of interpreting the data this week.
I think it's a good call. I'm pretty confident that I could bomb it a lot further if I was playing in the Swiss Alps than just somewhere at sea level, you know?
Right.
When are we going to that damn tournament? When are we doing our remote?
We've been talking
about it for 4 years.
It's coming up. You know, we could do that, Mauritius, or, you know, some nice place that the DP World Tour plays in the fall.
Looking forward to
that. One thing I do want to point out, just is on a week where all of us seem to put in driving distance and are focusing on stuff like that, I would like to say that the reason why I say I'm never a slave to the model is I will always go in and dig in deeper and all of that and look at the other stats and how they fit into
you bet
what
Brian
driving
Campbell
distance
again.
Is that, what's that?
Said you bet Brian Campbell. God.
No. It's that like you, as long as you're in like the upper half of the field, like you're still long, right? I mean, like it's a deal where if you take a look, right? So for example, let's use.
Yeah, I know where you're going with this. Oh, yeah.
So
yes.
Let's use Justin Thomas, for example, right? He's 73rd in this field in driving distance over the last, like, you know, 30 rounds or whatever.
I'm going to go to my Rick Rungood model and pull this.
But he's still 303 off the tee, right? I mean, like, I just want to let you know, the bottom half, sure. You look at like a Tommy Fleetwood is sub 300. Like Tommy Fleetwood's like 296 off the tee. There is a difference between Tommy Fleetwood and, you know, Jake Knapp, where Jake Knapp is literally going to be 25 to 30 yards closer on some of these holes where he can just let it rip than some of these other guys. But,
so let's look at, how about Lee Hodges, 65th in driving distance in this field. He's 303 yards, right? You're talking about, that is, to go 10 yards further moves you up about 40 spots in the rankings.
Yeah.
That's how congested it is.
So like it's the guys at the very top, like it's really when I put the driving distance stuff in, like I want it to separate the guys for sure, but I'm more looking at the dudes at the very top and then the dudes at the bottom. And like everyone in between, I don't hold it against them like all that much, right? It's like, but it's like, hey, if I think it's an advantage, then certainly if you look at a Chris Goddard, who is 324 off the tee every single time, like, sure, if I think distance matters, well, this dude is going to be further down every single time than everybody, right? I mean, like that is a thing. But, you know, like if somebody's 316 or 305 even off the tee, it's not a massive, massive, massive deal.
Right.
It really becomes when the dudes are 290, 285, right, like whatever and all of that. Then you are at a massive disadvantage, specifically on these super long par fives, or this course has some super long par fours and stuff where you're now hitting, you know, you're hitting a 6-iron or 7-iron in where these other dudes are hitting 9-irons in and all that. It's just that is a big difference. But I just want people to, if you're looking at the raw stats, just understand that Scottie Scheffler, by the way, is still number one in my model, despite the fact that he only averages 305 off the tee. And like, he's got plenty of distance. He knows how to use it and all of that. So just separate it from the top and the bottom, and the guys in the middle, use your best judgment as to how much it means to you.
Perfect example. 45,
right? Yeah, 40 places.
Well, I was going to say perfect example if you're like comparing tours. Like, I noticed this when I was looking at the DP World Tour, and I think he only played like 2 events. Mm-hmm. I saw Christian Bezuidenhout at 323.9 on driving distance average on that tour, and yet I look on the PGA Tour and he's 287.9,
right.
165. So, you know, you're gonna get outliers in the data, and you're always gonna get the top guys too in driving distance. Mm-hmm. Like it's Pat Jeter, it's Nicklas Norgaard, it's Rory, it's Goddard, Jesper Svensson. So it's always gonna get these guys. So that's not necessarily, even if we weigh driving distance heavier than average, that doesn't mean it's just okay, play all the bombers this week necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So I just kind of wanted to give that because like people are going to hear me say that I put a quarter of the model into driving distance. And I can tell you right now, I'm about to name three guys that have outrights on that are in like that 50, 60, 70 ish range as far as driving distance. Right. But again, that doesn't bother me. I mean, if they're, yeah, they're still long enough to where I feel fine with how that goes. So
now this is a good conversation. Cause just to further it just one step forward, even what I was showing off, that was my last 16 round model too. Right. So last 16 rounds, that's going to depend on where these guys played, right? What tournaments they played at. And just like Wes kind of made the point of the tours being different. Okay. Every course is built differently and how far you can drive the ball. So that could affect those numbers. I mean, one guy could have, you know, what, 10, 15 yard difference. If I stretch that from 16 rounds to out to 36 rounds, well, depending on the courses they play.
That's why I did 30 rounds in mine, because I knew I was emphasizing driving distance so much that I at least wanted to make sure that I had like 7-8 tournaments in there to where I get at least some different courses in all of that. Because if I, like you said, Kelly, if I did driving distance as heavily as I did and only did it for the last like 3 or 4 weeks, that's just going to skew the hell out of the numbers and all that. So anyway, just a nice little disclaimer there for
That was a good conversation. I'm doing a hell of a job directing so far on this show. Let's just keep rolling. This is
you're popping things up. Yeah, you're doing all kinds of stuff.
My internet's going to shit out now at any second. That's a stone cold lie.
I was just about to say, and you've made it 30 minutes with your internet working. I mean, like this is good stuff here.
We're peaking. We're major championship form in terms
that's
of
the production. Yeah.
All right, Wes, you threw the stuff in there. It spit out some stuff. You did some more research. Who did you end up on this week?
Okay, we've crapped on this guy throughout this episode of Long Shot, so why not start with him? Tommy Fleetwood, 22-1, who Kelly and I were very happy to see him fumble the bag on the 18th there at TPC River Highlands, where it got Keegan Bradley home for us. So, you know, but Tommy's had a couple weeks. He went to Wimbledon with his wife, you know, seemed in pretty good spirits. And I'm coming back to him here. He finished runner-up, by the way, at Royal Portrush, which is next week's venue, of course. Finished runner-up to Shane Lowry. Runner-up here to Aaron Rye. Lost in a playoff in 2020. He's done a lot of losing, unfortunately. But outside the runner-up, fourth and sixth here in 2022, 2023. So he's got the game, and he's got the experience. He's won on links-style golf courses before on the DP World Tour. So I'm going to give Tommy Fleetwood a shot here. Hey. Just going with the gut.
Wes, it's not on American soil. I'm allowing you can make the bet. Like he's just a loser in America. Bet him in America.
If there's a way to get his first PGA Tour win, it's got to be in Europe then, or it's got to be in the UK. So that actually did play at least a little small thought in my mind when I went ahead and made that click on Tommy Fleetwood. And then let's go narrative. Let's go a little soap opera here with these next two players because they're kind of tied together. Colin Morikawa at 25-1, eighth last time out in Detroit. Now he has yet another caddy on the bag this week. It is one Billy Foster. Billy Foster, you're probably, if you follow this regularly enough, are familiar with him because he has worked with a lot of European players, Seve Ballesteros, Darren Clark, Thomas Bjorn, and one Matt Fitzpatrick. More on him in a moment. So, you know, Morikawa, I think he kind of finally figured it out. Remember when he won the Open at Royal St. George and he missed the cut really badly at the Scottish Open and didn't know that firm turf and then switched his blades and then won the Claret Jug the very next week? He kind of figured it out here last year, too. The first time he was here, he missed the cut, and then he finished fourth. So, you know, you get an experienced guy on the bag, I think, this week for Morikawa, who's been up and down and I think has been, you know, gripping a little bit and a little bit short with the press and everybody around him. He hadn't won since October 2023. It's hard to believe. Zozo in Japan. But, you know, I think that this could be a good week. This could be a good week for him with Foster. That's going to be interesting. And meanwhile, on the other side,
Wes, let me real quickly just to add to this. I did go ahead and put in a Morikawa ticket for next week, just for people, just an early. I don't know if it is still out there. There is an outlier number at Caesars that is, it was 33-1 on Morikawa, which was like a place in town that we all respect was at 22 already on Morikawa. So like you're literally sitting there like 10 points off of market. So I did throw in a number on Morikawa, and it was a lot of the stuff you just said here, but also the fact that it was just an incredible market outlier there. So again, if you're listening to this and it still happens to be available, I think that number on Morikawa, anything north of 30, everybody is at 25 or lower on him, like for next week. So
I may join on that actually, yeah. if I could find that here after the program. But
that is still up, my friends, 33 to 1.
All right, we're doing that. Well, we're doing that after the show. That's been added to the list. One guy I did bet next week already for Royal Port Rush, and also bet this week, is one Matt Fitzpatrick at 45-1, who's kind of starting to show some signs of life. Remember last year, only had two top tens. He and Billy Foster split at the Players. They were together, of course, when he won the U.S. Open years ago at the Country Club at Brookline. Had a lot of success together. But sometimes player caddy relationships, it's just kind of like, okay, we've gone as far as we can go, and it's time for a change for both of them. And I think it could work out for both guys. And for Fitz, it kind of has been, because he's got a couple top tens in the last 8 weeks, eighth at Detroit, where he's fifth off the tee, eighth on approach. And also the putter is starting to get back, because Fitzpatrick, I used to almost call him like the British Jordan Spieth. And it's not because they're both endorsed by Under Armour. But Fitz was such a good putter, and that's like how Spieth was, where they were maybe a little bit shorter off the tee, and then now they've kind of picked up distance, both of them, off the tee over recent years. So he was first, by the way, Fitz, in putting at the U.S. Open at Oakmont, and he was runner-up here on debut in 2021, lost that playoff he was in with Thomas Dietrich, and also the eventual winner, Minwoo Lee. So Matty Fitz, I think, and I think there's the urgency, too, because he's not a certainty for that Ryder Cup team, and he's been such a core guy, I think, for that European side, that it's like you can't imagine him not being on the team, even though he's not one of the stars like a Rahm or a Rory or Victor Hovland or somebody like that. But I think Fitz, he's got something good coming this summer, and it could be this week or perhaps even next. So Matthew Fitzpatrick, 45-1.
Ton Adam of experience Scott. At this yeah. course, too.
Yeah, ton. Absolutely. And has won on links, too. Has won the Dunhill Links Championship, which that's at Carnoustie, St. Andrews, Kings Barnes. That's the trio that they play in October. So links experience for him, as does Adam Scott at 55-1. He was the unlucky loser here to Robert McIntyre, where it looked like Scott was going to win that thing. And remember, McIntyre got that shaky lie on the par 5. And he got relief from it, where it was like, I don't know if he should be getting relief from this, but he did. And then he hit a bullet like to 3 feet and made eagle and eventually won the tournament. And, you know, perhaps he was due a break after what happened to him against Rory the year before at this very same event. Scott was, look, he was in the final group at the U.S. Open, ended up T12, but those conditions were bad on Sunday, so I'm not going to really knock him for that. He's actually been in the top 20 in three of the last four majors dating back to the Open, where he was top 10. Link's experience could be a really sneaky threat in that mid-range. I still think Adam Scott, even in his early 40s, you feel like he's got one more big one left in him, because that swing is still so good, and he hits it well, and he's a good, consistent player. Maybe it's coming at the Open next week. Hopefully it comes this week at 55-1. So Adam Scott, Rasmus Højgaard at 80-1, and we're getting two Rasmuses for the price of one, so we're going to start with Højgaard here. Frustrating season on the PGA Tour so far. He was runner-up with Nicolai in New Orleans, eighth in driving distance, finished 10th here in 2022. So Rasmus Højgaard, 80-1, and then how about Rasmus Nygaard Pedersen at 90-1, who's got two runner-ups this year, one in Qatar and one in Puerto Rico, and plus three additional top tens. Six for strokes gained off the tee, 11th on approach on the DP World Tour amongst those regulars. Fourth last year at the Dunhill Links, so he's got some links golf pedigree. So Rasmus Nygaard Pedersen, 90-1. And then one triple-digit bomb. Let's go Lori Cantor at 175-1, who returned to the DP World Tour last summer, got his first win in Germany, won in Bahrain earlier this year, number one for strokes gained off the tee on the DPWT, and also seventh for approach amongst the regulars in this week's field, seventh last week at the BMW International Open. A couple just missed that maybe I reserved a right to ads, and these would be like kind of the longer-priced European Tour regulars. I considered Ha Tong Lee, who's in like anywhere from 125 to 150. Christopher Reitan, the Norwegian, who's been playing tremendous on the DP World Tour. And then I also looked at Nikolai Højgaard. I was almost going to go with our colleague Dave Ross, like his approach, because he's like, I never know which Højgaard to pick, so I just play both of them. So I almost actually did that with Nikolai, but just Rasmus on the card for now.
He kept picking the wrong one for like a month in a row. It was one of the funniest things I'd ever seen.
Kelly Bidlin, what ended up on your card, my friend?
All right, let's go back to the big Swede, Ludvig Åberg. Welcome back to the betting card. Finally looking like he's putting some things back together here. The ball striking numbers getting more consistent. That's what was wonky here, kind of middle of the season, where you weren't seeing really consistency between off the tee and approach numbers. Last 16 rounds, he's 29th off the tee, 19th in driving distance, 19th in approach in the field, 8th opportunities gained. So just seeing that consistency back with him. Finished T4 here last year, so has played well at the course. When you're seeing this is a guy, every time he drifts out to that 30-ish number, I'm going to be in on him. So a 30-to-1 bet outright in on Ludvig. I'm basically all mid-range this week, as we discussed a little bit at the top of the board. It was fairly easy for me to move down that. Like I said, I think I've got more interest in a Scheffler next week. Even a Rory, I'd probably have more interest in next week as well. So Ludvig's where I started. I really had no intention of betting this guy this week, but what he has done at this course over his career and then even recent form, I'm back to Bobby Mack. There's a 33-to-1 out there, FanDuel Boyd here in town in Las Vegas. He's a play for me. Bet Bobby Mack. I went outright in top 10. Ludvig, I did outright in top 5, just kind of how I'm blending my outright covers this week. Bobby Mack, last 16 rounds, he's top 35 and kind of all the ball striking numbers you're looking at. 11th in putting. The putters looked good. The long irons are working right now. I think that's going to come into play since he's not one of the longest guys off the tee. And just recently, T17 at the Travelers, second at the U.S. Open, a T20 at the Memorial, T6 at the Charles Schwab. And that, combined what he's done at this course, one last year, second in 2023, a miscut in 2022, T18 in 2021. It's just top 20 after top 20 here at his National Open. So I'm going right back to Bobby Mack. Really wasn't planning on playing him, but can't argue with recent form and what he's done at this course. So outright in top 10 on him. And then I am with you on Matt Fitzpatrick this week, Wes, and he is not a guy that I seem to be attracted to betting very often, but really can't argue with what he's done recently as well. We talked about it when you broke it down, played the course a ton, has had a lot of success here at T6 a couple years ago. He's in that interesting, and that Ludvig has this going on right now too, where the ball striking numbers are better recently, and actually the putter hasn't been as great. But Fitzpatrick's such a quality putter over his career, as you mentioned, Wes. I'm kind of okay with that. I'd actually rather see that the ball striking numbers are looking better right now than the short game. So I trust the short game, get him over to Scotland. So Fitzpatrick, I am in outright top 5 on him. And then last outright, I played my man, Matt Brown's favorite golfer of all time, Samuel James Burns III, or I don't even know what his real name is, but Sam Burns. I love Sam Burns this week, man. He was like my third-rated golfer the last 16 rounds. Great approach numbers, as you talked about before, Matt, one of the best putters on the planet we know. I really, just the approach numbers and the iron game coming around has been the massive difference with him recently, and he's one of those guys, and maybe this is one of the guys you were hinting at, but just long enough, right, where you see where he's going to rank at, might not be all that impressive, but go look at the yardage. He's still long enough off the tee that works here. Recent results for him, T17 at the Travelers, T7 at the U.S. Open, second the Canadian Open. He's been playing great golf, and another guy that has had strong finishes here, T19 2 years ago, T18 in 2021. So that is my 4 outrights: Åberg, McIntyre, Fitzpatrick, Burns. I also played a top 20 on Burns, did a top 5 and a top 20 on him. I'm pretty bullish on Burns this week. Top 20 on Tommy Fleetwood, plus 115 over at MGM. Ty's paying full. Give me plus money on Tommy Fleetwood. I'll keep going back to it. And then one other guy a couple weeks ago that I was almost able to get home with, I only stuck to a top 20 market here, but man, I could make an argument for going heavier on him. Max Grazerman. I am back on Max Grazerman top 20 this week. T21 here last year. He's even got good experience on this course. And just, man, the numbers off the tee and approach have been excellent here last five events. Long dude off the tee as well. So, like Grazerman, if you wanted to play him even more than I did, I wouldn't hate it. And then a couple matchups I played. You mentioned Outong Lee, Wes. I played Jake Knapp against him. Jake Knapp just would not stop rating out highly for me. I couldn't get it to any other bets with him, but I thought a matchup over Haotong Li that I really didn't check on how great he's really been playing recently at minus 105, I thought was a good bet. And then Benny on minus 134 over Sung J.M., who can't hit a 7-iron right now. And that is my whole card so far.
Matthew Brown. I have something that I have never done on this podcast here in 2025. I have 8 outrights this week.
I really liked this week, too. It was dangerous. I didn't want to do too much.
Mainly because there were just some numbers on some Euros that just didn't kind of match where they were showing up in the model for me. And then when I dug in a little bit further, it was worth it. Now, not all outrights are created equal. Of course, these guys that I really, really, really love are going to get more of a financial backing than some of these other ones. But needless to say, I will match you on Ludwig and Burns. I have both of those into the account this week. Ludwig, I'm trying to catch on the rise, and Burns, I'm trying to get before everybody realizes that he might actually be a really great fit for this course. As you mentioned, so this does fall into the whole deal. He's 306 off the tee, right? I mean, yeah. Like 306 off the tee is fine, but if you looked and you were just going by rankings, he's like 55th in this field in driving distance. I don't care. That's what I was saying. It's all relative, right? I mean, the guy that is 55th at 306 is 6 yards behind the guy who's 21st in Grazerman at 312, you know? So, mm-hmm. I mean, again, it's not that big of a difference. So I love the way that Sam has started to come around. I think we're getting kind of a pretty decent buy low spot on him. You catch him 40-1 out there in the market. You just mentioned with Ludwig at 30. Ludwig is a guy that if I'm going to value driving distance and dudes that can go score, the problem does become is I did put in a little bit of around the green stuff as well, Wes, in mine, and he is horrific. He looks like he's like me around the green out there. So, like, he shouldn't miss these giant greens, but, like, if the winds get going and starts blowing these approach shots all over the place and stuff like that, like, this ticket is going to be toast. Like, he is awful around the greens. I mean, it's very, very bad.
Lost in 3 straight. Yeah, it's not good. Victor Hovland vibes for sure.
Yeah, so that said, just trying to catch him where, look, you see, like, I valued off the tee. He's gaining off the tee in every single tournament, basically. A lot of the stuff's coming together, just hadn't been able to quite put 4 rounds together. Maybe he can do it here in this one.
He's also a guy, Matt, that, like, I have a feeling next week, I really haven't done much prep at all for next week. I have a feeling next week, though, I'm going to have no interest in, but I really like him this week. It's just the difference. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I actually love this event, Scottish Open. I think it's an interesting course with kind of the mix of styles, like you broke down, Wes, where you kind of get the Parkland and then you get the kind of more link style greens complexes. And then I love the whole tour split thing too, right? That we got the two events going this week and it's half DP World Tour, half PGA Tour. I think it's awesome. But Ludwig, love this week. Have a feeling next week he's not, because of that around the green ability, probably no interest at all.
A guy at 65-1 that I'm just going to try to ride a heater with here, 13th overall in the combination of all the models that I did this week, is Ryan Fox. Ryan Fox is another one of those dudes that is, like, just long enough off the tee. If you just go by the ratings, it's going to say he's 68th in this field in driving distance, but it's 304 off the tee. Like, he's fine. That's plenty long enough. But guy's been converting the whatever lack of distance he has into birdie opportunities. If you look at this, birdie or better gained in this field, he's 23rd. Opportunities gains, he's 24th in this field. He really plays well on par fours, which we think are going to be a big deal this week. And he's inside the top 20 on approach as well. Just a super well-rounded, solid game. And Kelly's got it pulled up right there, as you can see. And it's kind of like, hey, listen, this guy's just been lurking, right? Couple wins, T20, T19, T17. Like, he's just kind of around. And his skill set, at least for what I valued this week, rated very, very highly. So Ryan Fox at 65-1 for me.
Former Dunhill Lynx winner. Yeah, absolutely. Oh. And unfortunately, when I had Sam Burns in Canada, but we'll let that one go. But yeah, former winner of the Dunhill Lynx too, Ryan Fox. So he has won on Lynx golf courses before, played them regularly because he was playing predominantly on the DP World Tour, or the European Tour, before getting his PGA Tour card. Now plays more stateside, but guy's got pedigree. I certainly looked at him as well this week. He will be at least a placement market guy this week.
Let's head back to Team Can Put the Lights Out, and longer than you might think. I'm going back to the well with Harry Hall. You can find him out there at 70-1 in the market.
He was one of my first leave-offs, Matt.
Right there with Burns as far as just making every putt that he has a chance to make. He's giving himself the opportunities, which is what I really like. If you putt really well and you're also inside the top 20 in opportunities, that is awesome for me. So I really, really like that stat, which is what really kind of pushed him over the edge to get me there. 305 off the tee, perfectly fine, long enough for me. Doesn't make a ton of bogeys, inside the top 20 in bogey avoidance in this field as well. And everything that you've kind of that we plugged in this week, yeah, he doesn't light it up outside of putting, but he's just inside the top 25-ish in all of those things. So maybe we can get kind of a God mode run from him here in this one. But Harry Hall, I know we got close with him a few weeks ago, and I'm going back to the well. Just too much to like, I think, with Harry Hall this week.
There is a reason why he is not in Kentucky this week defending the ISCO Championship. Because he's been playing really damn good golf. Being in this field. So starting to show a little bit more in some bigger events and has been very consistent, I think, on the tour this year. So I don't think that's a bad call at all.
I'm going to draw the line here of this will be the end of the one of the guys that I really liked as far as the outrights. And I got three guys that I played anyway, just because as I'm a slave to the model. Sometimes whenever the model loves something and I go in and see why it loves them, then I'll go there. The last of the... of the guys I really like this week, Thomas Dietrich, another dude that is just like, again, if you look, what's that?
So what's Dietrich been up to? I didn't even think about it.
After he won the Phoenix Open by like 8 shots earlier this year.
Yeah. He is a dude that as I went in, I looked around, I'm like, okay, who has various skill sets, but lacks in some of the things that I really, really care about this week. And so you can go in, you see gaining off the tee in most of the places. He has the spike weeks in the putting category, which again, like I'm okay with. Typically good around the green, but spike week. He is the dude that I'm okay because it's way out at 90-1. And a 90-1 dude is going to have some flaws because if not, he would be way shorter than he is. And so like at a 90-1 guy that can have spike weeks, then I am A-okay with that. I mean, look at the U.S. Open, right? He's almost green across the board except for on putting. And, like, that's just, you know, again, he's not a great putter. He's going to have good weeks and bad weeks and everything in between with all of that. And so the fact that he does have in his bag, though, the capability of gaining multiple strokes in every single one of the categories is the thing for me that was intriguing in a tournament like this that could play a little bit easier. So, again, he's way out at 90-1. That's what you get with a 90-1 golfer, you know?
Yep.
Last two dudes, I played Rasmus as well, Wes, so I don't need to go back over Rasmus. Same reasons, all the stuff that you did. Two dudes that I had to go in and look at. Wes will be familiar because he bets more of the other tours than we do. But 10th overall in my model this week, Marco Pingy? Ping?
Yeah.
Pingy? 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 I don't know. P-E-N-G-E. First in this field. Last 30 rounds off the tee, inside the top 30 in bogey avoidance. He's long off the tee, averaging about 309 off the tee. Birdie or better gain percentage, 6th overall in this field. Now, again, the competition always has to come into play with all of that, but it does look like this guy's got a little bit of game. And as I kind of dug in, I start to see like, oh, he won on the tour pretty recently. He finished third. Yeah, he finished third pretty recently, a T11 just in the BMW not too long ago. So, like, he's got enough game to get him to the top of a leaderboard, and way out at 125-1 could be a dude that, as long as he could play himself into position somewhere on Sunday, could could make me some money. But again, just a model darling that I felt like needed to make the card somehow. Kelly, you're like staring at this. You're like, wait, I like this guy. You like Pingy, don't you? Oh, Kelly. Oh, his internet froze. Look at that. Ah, we were wondering when it was going to happen, Wes. It finally happened.
Yeah. I thought it was going to be mine because I was trying to pull up his numbers, but I knew the name you mentioned because he did win over in China earlier this year. So Englishman, even though kind of an Italian-sounding name, but just 27, has been a pro for several years, won a couple times on that Challenge Tour, which is like the Corn Ferry, basically the equivalent over there, and then won here earlier this year at the Hainan Classic in China.
Fortunately, only one more for me, and I can wrap it up. Kelly already gave his picks. I went another guy that was modeled very, very well. You might be familiar with the name. I had to do the research. Christopher Reiten?
I mentioned him, the Norwegian, earlier. I almost played him. He's been on a tear, by the way, on the DP World Tour.
Yeah, so this guy literally in one of the models was eighth for me. Like, literally was eighth, and I go, like, how the hell is this guy eighth? And it's like, oh, first, second, T13, T4, T2. Like, he's just, like, absolutely lighting it up over there. Wes, you can find him at 200-1 out there in the market.
Yeah.
So, a guy that is at least proven that he can get inside the top 10 in tournaments, and you're going to give me 200-1, I'll bite it. You know, I'll take a bite of the apple there.
He was runner up to Pengi actually in that China event back in late April, and then won in Belgium at the Soudal Open. I believe that was his first DP World Tour win. So, you know, another guy, late 20s, maybe a little bit of a late bloomer. Was going to play at Texas, but then turned pro. So, you know. Maybe the Norwegian, that would be the Norwegian I would bet this week instead of maybe Victor Hovland.
Again, and a lot of these guys were mentioning, you know, if you're out there playing DFS, fellas, I mean, you know, Dietrich's cheap, Hall's cheap, Højgaard's cheap, this Pingy guy's cheap, obviously, right? They're all cheap, and so, like, maybe they can round out a lineup with some of the other studs that you have to pay up for in DFS, and so maybe those can be the guys that can help you get you across the finish line if they can get inside the top 20, top 10 for you, something like that. So, oh my God, he popped back in. What did he even pop back in for? We're done with the podcast. There's no reason.
He wanted to hear more about Marco Pingy.
Yeah, he did. And guess what? It doesn't matter. His internet's not working. Anyway, this is now no longer a joke. Kelly has to get new internet.
Google it, Kelly.
Yeah,
Google
seriously.
It.
This is like now he has to actually get new internet. This is no longer fun. Guys, as always, go over to the picks page on VSiN.com. You can see all of the stuff that we've got going on in there, so make sure that you take in all of that. We're running a special. You can get in for as low as $9.99 or $175 now through the end of the Super Bowl, so be sure and take advantage of all of that stuff. For Wes, for Kelly, I am Matt. Good luck on all your Scottish picks.